I'll just say that certain people in the Packers organization wanted Ryan Grant to play. And I don't think that's going to change. I think that it's Ryan Grant's job, and he has to absolutely fall on his face to lose it.
From our studios in Inwood, Manhattan, Cheesehead TV brings you two guys who like to think they know something about football.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another Cheesehead Nation production. Tonight we are Thursday Night Live, and with me, as always, is my partner here at Cheesehead TV, Mr. Corey Behnke.
Good evening, everyone. Tonight we'll be talking to Andrew Brandt, former Packers vice president and current president of the National Football Post, and of course, Packers beat writer Greg Bedard from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But first, we're going to talk about
money. That's right. Those who have it and those who don't in the Green Bay Packer hierarchy when it comes to the players on the field. Of course, as everyone knows, big news of the week, Mr. Greg Jennings got paid. Let's hear it for Greg Jennings.
Yay, Mr. Greg Jennings.
Most of all because he did it the right way. I mean, I think everybody in Packer Nation can agree, here's a guy who deserved to get paid. And not only that, went about it in a completely professional manner, didn't make a peep in the press about it. Yeah, people asked him about it, and he always said, I'm not going to talk about it. He let his play do the talking. He and his agent didn't make a single noise about wanting, you know, to get the deal done or anything. So, you got to be happy about that. You got to like it. You know, and obviously on the other end of the spectrum, we have Nick Collins, as everyone knows, has threatened to hold out.
Nick Collins.
They asked him about, will you be there at training camp? Mm-hmm. Are you planning on, you know, whatever? And he said, we'll see. Well, you know, we'll see indeed.
We'll see.
But Greg Jennings, you really can't say enough. And you can't say enough about the Packer organization doing it the right way, locking up a guy who deserves to be locked up. I mean, well, locked up contractually, of course. And thank you all for being here tonight, by the way. Got a nice healthy group here right from the get-go. Thanks for joining us. Brian Caravu from Railbird Central. Alex over at Packers Lounge. CD from Tundra Vision. We got Brandon from Acme Packing Company tonight. And Andy Man is here. Andy Man.
Iron Man took off from work today.
Iron Man. That is some true dedication there.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
But so, yeah, the Packers doing it the right way. Locking it up. Locking up Jennings long-term. Well, not even long-term. 3 more years. He'll be set to hit the free agent market again when he's like 29 years old. Which I thought, you know, that's a coup. That's a coup for he and his agent.
Definitely.
But the Packers, like I said, doing it right. McCarthy addressed this in his press conference about Jennings and, you know, how the Packers do their business. And here's what he had to say.
Well, I think clearly our program has been identified with the fact that we draft players, we develop players, and hopefully we're able to keep as many as we possibly can. Our free agent philosophy is well documented. From a coaching standpoint, you know, we're excited because these are players, these are individuals that we have relationships with. We have you know, history with these players. Greg's instance, on a personal level, you're always happy when anybody, player, coach, gets a contract that you know enables him to you know, put his family in a better situation. So, but I think our path and our philosophy with our football team was clearly identified.
Couldn't agree more. Absolutely perfect distillation of their philosophy, if you ask me. And like I said, you can't be anything but excited for Jennings and for the Packers on this one. And I would also like to point out that right here in this studio, I think it was 2 years ago, right about preseason, I was talking about how much I like Greg Jennings, and the gentleman across the table from me was giving Jennings a little bit of hate. wasn't feeling the love for
well,
Mr. Greg Jennings.
The Jennings from 2007 and the Jennings from 2008 are two different Jennings.
They are. But, yeah, I just got to say, I couldn't be happier. It's great. And it's a fun time to be a Packer fan. I got to say, I'm a little disappointed in what I'm hearing from the backup quarterbacks, coming out of minicamp.
Ouch.
Now, Greg wrote earlier this week that Brian Braun was picking it up a little bit, and apparently he did in the red zone drill. He threw a touchdown, ran for one. Earlier in the week, he wasn't looking too hot, and through OTAs, he was struggling mightily. So, you know, the question is starting to creep itself up again. Will they pick up a veteran quarterback?
Doubt it.
I doubt it, too. Now, I know a lot of people want them to, and I know, I understand.
Thompson has a little bit, okay, it's very minor, but Thompson has a little bit of, like, the Chinese mentality of saving face. He does, like, a little bit. Like,
okay,
like,
I can see that.
Like, 7% of all of his picks and stuff, right?
Right.
He kind of has this mentality of, like the punter situation last year.
Oh, jeez, okay? Don't start me on that.
Here's a situation where I'm going to save face. I'm not going to do what's best for the team.
You gotta wonder about that. I gotta say that you can't deny that. Like, you could argue against it, but you don't have a rational argument against
it. Well, and I'm not saying he does it all the time, but there's certain,
but it's definitely
certain players.
I don't know. And the way he falls in love with guys. I mean, Danny Lansana. What? Like, here's a kid who probably won't even make the squad this year, and we cut our best special teams player to keep him on the roster. Because Miami apparently wanted to get him. Oh, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be happy to know that earlier last week, NFL Network was replaying a Miami Dolphins game where Joey Hanos caught a touchdown pass as their number three.
You know you like that.
The guy we let go.
I know you're happy about that.
Oh, I was not very happy about that. I really liked Hanos.
Really?
I do. I think he's got great hands.
I think you posted about him more than any person who has played as little as he has.
You know what? I'm going to say... maybe Hanos, maybe Travis Jervey. Oh, I had to throw that in
why
there
do you
just
do
for
it?
You.
Why do
just
you have to
for
do
you?
It? Why are so many people excited about, like, it's not just you. A lot of people are excited when we throw Travis Jervey in there.
Travis Jervey is a classic.
There are other classics, though.
There are many, many classics.
Speaking of other classics, Arnie Herber is the third greatest quarterback to ever play for the Green Bay Packers.
You know, you threw up that post this week.
Don't play.
I got to say.
And nobody could play with it. Nobody could play with it.
Well, people tried.
No.
They wanted to.
Try, operative word.
Yeah, they attempted, but it didn't really work.
Even that guy, like, who? I told my dad, I'm like, who puts the Magic Man fifth, seriously?
Yeah, I don't know.
I love Don Majkowski.
He had one really nice
But who
good
puts
year.
Him fifth? That's a really good video, by the way.
It is a good video. We should find the guy who did that and have him in, you know, as a guest.
We should.
Because
I don't know.
You know,
I'd rather have Andrew Brandt as a guest, though.
Hey, and he'll be joining us soon.
No offense to top
video
five
guys.
Video man.
you know, I guess you got a point there. But I gotta say, I was surprised that there wasn't more pushback from that post.
Did we ever figure out how many? There's a good question. How many contracts do the Packers have on the books right now that Andrew Brandt?
You know what? That's a
very good question. Or a serious part of.
We can definitely do some research and find that out. I'm not going to ask him, though.
No, that's too. Yeah, it's too. He's like,
although
a lot.
Although I will say, I found it interesting that he, you know, two guys definitely in the news this week, Nick Collins and Greg Jennings, Andrew Brandt did both those contracts. So I'll definitely be asking him about that and a couple other Packer pertinent questions, as well as some stuff about the NFL in general. You know, there is, you know, a whole lot of drama down the pipe for the NFL, and I can't think of anybody better to ask about it.
And the NFL's smallest market team.
Yeah. I mean,
there's
there are
some
several.
Issues. There's some things.
You think about it. There's lots of teams. Buffalo would definitely be affected.
Oh yeah.
You know, Cincinnati, Cleveland, those teams. These teams will be definitely affected. So we'll ask him about that, and we'll ask him all sorts of things. It's crazy. Good evening, Andrew.
Hey, is this Aaron?
It is. How are you, Andrew?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Thanks a million for calling. I can't tell you. I know we've emailed and I've written it on the blog, but I just wanted to tell you, I guess, quasi in person, what an absolute honor it is that you've even checked out the site and that you're here with us tonight.
No. I mean, I like reading you guys and... I appreciate you being a fan of the site.
Oh, definitely. Speaking of the site, National Football Post, ladies and gentlemen, there you see it on the graphic that Corey's got up. How is it going? I mean, the site has obviously just taken off. I think you had written in the interview we did last year that you had heard from most of the teams. Are you still getting good feedback? What are people saying about it in the league to you?
I don't want to sound presumptuous, but I think we're hopefully a must-read for people in the industry, whether on the league side, the agent side, the team side, and certainly even players. You know, what we try to do, what I tried to do in bringing this group together is fill a void that we thought we saw out there in terms of web, internet, media, print, TV, radio. There's always one or two, maybe, people contributing to the major outlets that have experience in the NFL or experience in the industry, but we never saw a congregation of people that all have experience, whether in front office, scouting, coaching, playing, agent, bringing that group together and providing a unique and credible voice about the game we love. So we put this thing together about a year ago. We launched in August, and we just relaunched this week with a new look and a new distinctive site. And it's gotten a lot of, you know, we're building like any new site, and we're building a brand, but we think that we have something special, and hopefully that will continue.
Well, you know, we can't commend you enough. It is a fantastic resource.
And can I say, the flash bar at the bottom is amazing. I so want to copy that. I love that.
That was a neat thing.
Well, like I said, we are daily readers. We encourage all our readers to visit it. National Football Post. Andrew, obviously you're here because we are insane Packer fans. You have a very diehard audience with us tonight. I just want to go through a few things Packer-wise and then open up a few more questions about the NFL in general. First, obviously, sure. The big news being Greg Jennings' contract extension. A lot of people are painting this, not a lot, a few people are painting this as a win-win for both, you know, Jennings and the organization. Do you agree with that estimation, or do you see one side kind of coming out ahead over the other?
No, Aaron, I think it's a win-win. In the past now, what is it, about 9 months, the Packers have rewarded two of my favorites and two of my good friends. Aaron Rodgers and Greg Jennings, I think when you look at rewarding players, and I did contracts up there for 9 years, the hardest thing to figure out is, okay, this guy's been a good player for us. What's going to happen when he gets the big check? What's going to happen when he gets the money? Is he going to have the same motivation, the same industry, the same talent level, the same work ethic that's kept him going for this long? And frankly, we were burned a couple times in the past. But you look at players like Rodgers and Jennings and Campman a couple years ago, and those guys, you pay them, you don't worry. You just don't worry because they are the highest character and highest work ethic you got. And when you get the best players on your team also being the highest character guys, that's going to go a long way. So Greg got rewarded, and I know they've been trying to get something done with Greg for a while, but he got rewarded, and in a big way. And I don't have all the numbers yet on the contract, but
right.
I think the best thing about Greg's contract for the Packers is obviously he was their number one priority in a whole group of free agents, and they got it done. The best thing for Greg is he got a lot of money, and we can debate how much or what level he is or what number right. rank in the NFL, but the key for Greg is 4 years. He's going to be a free agent again before the age of 30.
Yeah, exactly.
So he'll have another payday, assuming he continues to play the way he is. So certainly a win-win for Greg, and I think the Packers, they got their man and the number one priority done.
Absolutely. Speaking of priorities, lots of speculation, obviously, of who's next. I don't know if they have anyone specifically in mind as far as tiers. Maybe they draw that up. I don't know. But obviously the one who's, you know, the player that's been in the news the most, made the most noise, is Nick Collins. Now, here's another player that you negotiated the original 5-year rookie contract back when you could do that sort of thing.
Right.
And the question is, I guess for me and a lot of Packer fans is, you know, it's been reported, obviously people know, and Peter King made a kind of a big deal about it this week, about the $2.5 million escalator put into the
right.
contract that he's reached, you know. Wasn't that, you know, essentially put in there to avoid this very scenario, to have an unhappy player going into his final year of his contract?
Well, theoretically, I think he's right. You're right. You know, the thing about Nick is 2005 was the year we had Aaron in the first round and Nick and a guy named Terrence Murphy in the second round. And Nick was actually the traded pick for Mike McKenzie. And you know, we did a five-year deal because they allowed it, and soon after that they disallowed it. Obviously, it was a struggle. It was one of my hardest negotiations, just trying to get a five-year deal in the second round because we had never gotten that before. And the Packers are using the value of that length of contract. In order to get the five-year deal, you do have to upside the fifth year, which we did, incentivized it, and he earned all the escalator and got up to $3 million. But, you know, NFL players, it's not about what they're making now. It's about the big bonus. It's about the long-term financial security of the upfront money.
Right.
It's why players are even unhappy making $7, $8, $9, $10, $11 million on a franchise tag, because they want the security, the ego value, whatever it is, of that big bonus. So he wants a deal. And I'm not going to take sides between Nick and the Packers, but I would think he's high on the list. Now that they got Greg Dunn, he's a solid player, and obviously he's going to have a lot of attraction on a free agent market.
Yeah, I guess the thing that, I mean, and I've written about this extensively on the site, as have, you know, other members of our blog nation, I guess you'd say. I guess a lot of what we're hearing about, you know, the Packers last year caving in the Ryan Grant scenario, and now what you wrote yesterday, I believe, about the fact that, you know, Collins and Grant are represented by the same agency, Sports Stars, you know, that might be the driving force behind this. Do you agree? Do you think the Packers made a mistake with Grant? And do you think that that's kind of feeding into Collins' mentality?
I don't know if it's feeding into Collins. I think it's obviously feeding into the agents for Collins. Here they were. They had a player that was really had 2 years away from any free agency at a much lower level of years of service who got his deal, and now they have a player that has played 4 years on a rookie contract and has made a Pro Bowl, and they can't probably feel like they can't get a contract. So maybe they feel like, wow, you know, are we getting the same treatment we got on Ryan Grant? What happened was they worked out a deal on Grant, and it was a deal that was the earliest the Packers have ever gone to a player in terms of his stream of contract. I know in my years there, we went to guys at the end of their third year.
Right.
But probably not any sooner than that. And obviously Grant was sooner. I don't know if there's a relationship, you know, if there's necessarily a causal relationship between Collins and Grant, but the fact that they are the same agents, you know, it makes it something interesting to talk about.
Most certainly.
You know, and again, the Grant situation was right in the middle of you-know-who.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for not saying the name. That's good. That's good.
Right.
Who are we talking about?
So there was a you know, the midsummer drama going on last summer, and maybe that was helpful to Ryan Grant.
You know, obviously you got to think so. Turning away from such, you know, negative thoughts and, you know, such, you know, I guess something that I guess Packer fans would probably deem as kind of nerve-wracking. Looking at the positive side of things, you know,
yeah.
It's funny. Yesterday, I went back and read, obviously, the interview we did last year, and I was drawn back to I think it was a phone interview on the radio you did with Chris Hovel a couple years ago about the change in mentality / culture when it came to contracts in Green Bay, and how you really changed how you worked the contracts and how you wanted to change things into more, I guess, incentivize is the word you just used, to get guys in town. And now you've seen, I guess, definitely the last 2 years, probably the last three, attendance at OTAs is just, you know, it's knockout. It's like 90, 95% all 3 years in a row. I mean, I know you're not a part of the Packer organization anymore, but you got to feel proud looking at that and knowing that you set the groundwork for that.
I do, Aaron. I appreciate that. I think one thing when Mike McCarthy came in, it was probably his first 5 minutes of his press conference, that he wanted to change the culture and make it a year-round occupation, make Green Bay people's home. I understand, everyone understands, the weather and not the most attractive place in the late winter and early spring.
It's gorgeous. But, what are you talking about?
I got a house there if anyone's listening. But I guess I shouldn't say too much bad about the weather. We had to change that. We had to make sure that we had at least 95% attendance at these OTAs, at these workouts, at the off-season program, not only for the whole chemistry team building part of it, but just for the working out part of it. You know, every contract I dealt with there just was such a hassle because so many guys said, well, what if we just work out at our home and our trainer will send you letters every week, every day, whatever you want.
Really?
Can't we just do that?
People seriously came to you with that?
And I had to deal with that, and I said, no, that's not the same thing. Because if you're out in Houston or Dallas or Florida or California or Arizona, the guy works for you. And you may be tired one day, and you may not want to do certain drills one day. That's not the same thing. You have to be with the team, with the Packers strength coaches, doing the same drills that everyone wants. Now, some players are more industrious in their work ethic during the workouts than others, but it was important to have them there. So we changed the contracts, and basically we bid off part of salaries, part of roster bonuses, part of signing bonuses, and built them into the contracts in terms of workout bonuses, anywhere from $50,000 to $250,000 a year for making 85 to 90% of workouts. And that's a key factor. And now players all the time are like, where am I on my workouts? Where am I going to miss a day? And if they miss a day, you know, it could turn into hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the culture has been built there. And now it's interesting reading the clips up there. It's a big deal when you don't see someone there.
Exactly. I mean, the attendance taking has gotten out of control. So thanks for that. No, I'm kidding.
That's a good thing.
It is a good thing. It is. And like I said, I mean, it's been incredible. The last, especially over, you know, prior regimes, even when Holmgren was here, it was nowhere near what it is now.
I don't think, you know, excuse me, I don't know about Holmgren, but Ray Rhodes, Mike Sherman, Nothing bad about it. It just wasn't that big a deal, and there was an understanding that, hey, let's let them get away. We understand it's not the most inviting place in this time of year, and we'll get them fresh when they come back. But that's all changed.
Yeah, and only for the better, in my estimation. Sticking with the Packers for just one more bit here. This week, you also wrote, I think it was on Monday, in your Monday Matters column, Monday Money Matters, you wrote about the release of the Packers financials and how you dreaded this time of year when you were with the Packers. Because obviously, as the only public franchise, everyone pours over the books. I mean, and not only from the NFL, but, you know, from a business standpoint as well. You know, everybody takes a look at this, looks at what the Packers are doing financially, because it's the only place you can get anywhere near that kind of information. And I was just wondering, you know, obviously, even now, you're a consultant with the Eagles. You are on the club side of things. I know you used to be an agent. But now you're on the club side. So as a representative of club side, and yes, this is a complete pander to try and get a player to come on and give us the other side. But, you know, as someone from the club side, tell us why. Tell fans who just see a bunch of greedy people on both sides. Obviously, I think that's the, you know, layman's view of it. What the club's case is that players' salaries are too high and they're climbing and they're taking up too much space as far as their piece of the pie. And thus, this reasoning was what the owners gave for reopening the CBA talks. What's the case there? I mean, I guess I can kind of understand it because you do see the players' salaries escalating. But without seeing the books being opened up from all the franchises, it's hard as a fan to say, well, how do I know that, you know, Jerry Jones doesn't have this massive, you know, tucked away portion of like some kind of reserve fund that obviously no other club is going to have?
Right. This is the essence of the collective bargaining agreement, and it's the most important question in football. And the only way I can answer it is this. It used to be a time in the NFL where the television money itself would kind of take care of your payroll, and then all your other operations would come from your other local revenues. But that's antiquated now. And the money has gotten higher for the players. We're now at a cap of $123 million, and it's actually $127 with this cash adjustment they made. And the revenues are not supporting it in a general sense, not talking specifically about any team, but you may have a team that has $300 million of revenues and they're paying, say, $130 million of player costs, And sure, that's fine. They're paying less than 50% of their revenues in player costs. But then you have a whole host of teams that are making under $200 million of revenues and paying $120 to $130 million of player costs. So they're paying 60 to 70% of their revenues to players, and then it's making a much harder time to make a profit. This is with a salary cap, and it just shows you there are so many other revenue sources coming into football that give some of the other teams advantages that smaller markets don't have. Mm-hmm. Now, the Packers are quite a brand, and I lived it for 9 years. They're unbelievable. Shows like this everywhere. It's a special brand, and yes, as I wrote, I'd get that call every last Monday of June saying, I can help you use that $20 million of profit you just reported.
Right.
I remember I was in a negotiation, I believe it was for Donald Driver or Mark Tauscher, and we were close. I mean, we were going to have this thing done in a day or two. And part of my ending negotiation was, that's all we got. We can't afford any more.
Oh, no.
And then this comes out. Oh, God. Okay.
I didn't explain that one away, right? Well, you touched on it right there before about the small market clubs. You know, the NFL in general, I mean, we're going back into the CBA. Obviously, everyone is circled next March as D-Day when the cap might go away. And, you know, obviously Green Bay fans are concerned for obvious reasons. A lack of a salary cap. You know, people have visions of baseball coming and, you know, people not being able to compete in the small markets. Now, do you think that that's realistic? I mean, do you really think, I mean, obviously with no cap comes no floor. And there are some cheapskate owners out there. I mean, I'm not going to name names, but we all know who they are. You know, so I don't think it's the bonanza that people think it's going to be. I mean, but I'm Joe Schmuck who writes a blog. I mean, what do you think? Do you really think it'll be the extinction of the smaller clubs eventually, no matter what? Or do you think smart general managers will be able to be competitive in a, you know, in an environment like that?
Well, I think we think alike. And I've always been of the opinion, and I've been around some good ones, is that strong management wins rather than spending. And it's been proven for years. It's been proven in baseball, where we had the Tampa Rays making this World Series at a $40 million payroll and the Yankees at $200 million not making the playoffs.
We live in New York, Andrew. You don't have to tell us.
It's proven in football, too, where sometimes the most spending, I always made the comment when people got upset when the Packers weren't throwing checks at players in early March, that usually the teams that make the noise in March don't make noise in January. And that's a telling comment, because if people assume spending wins, then that's just another discussion. But as you noted, here's the things that could happen if we don't have a cap.
Right.
Free agency goes from 4 years to 6 years. That means 150 players who are supposed to be free agents in March are not. One of those would have been Greg Jennings, but that's been taken off the table. That'll include Nick Collins. That'll include players that have been in the league over 4 years, but less than six, now thinking they're going to hit the jackpot in March, will not. The other thing is, you mentioned, no ceiling, no floor. Cap, everyone talks about the cap ceiling, but no one talks about the cap floor, which this year is about $108 million. So we have a floor of 108, a ceiling of 123. If we have no cap, we have no ceiling, no floor, so teams could spend $200 million, but teams could spend $40 million. And yes, maybe there are teams that want to roll back just like they do in baseball, and that could happen. So, yes, the bonanza probably will not be there. This was set up, so they're poison pills for the players and the owners, and what it sets up for is negotiations from now until the end of the year to try to get something resolved.
And speaking of, you know, the negotiations that have begun, you know, both sides have, I won't even say tepidly, they've definitely like fired their first shots, at least in the press. How much do you know? I mean, I think you've probably met Demaryius Smith. You know, I think a lot of fans were surprised, at least the fans who follow it, were surprised at his election of the players' union. You know, what kind of guy is he? Do you know him? Have you worked with him before? I mean, tell us something about him that we might not know.
Well, honestly, I don't. I mean, I know people who know him, but he was extremely a surprise choice. I know Trace Armstrong. I know Troy Vincent. I know David Cornwell, the other three candidates for that job, and know him very well. And then this guy, a lawyer in Washington, D.C., comes out of nowhere, has a wonderful presentation in Hawaii to the player reps, and is voted by an overwhelming margin. He's now on his tour, 32 teams in however many days, and he's getting to know the players and getting to know the system. I think him and Roger Goodell will have some talks in earnest soon, but they haven't yet.
Right.
I think probably anything we read into rhetoric about what the key issues are is probably just going to be out there for show. It's all going to come down to economics, as we know, and there are going to be other issues thrown around, but it's all going to come down to how much and how long, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, I mentioned the owner's case for the revenues. I've also been on the player side. I understand this. You know, I've mostly hear from people on the streets about what about all these athletes? They're in their underwear. They're out there playing. They're making millions of dollars playing a children's game.
Right.
And my response has always been, it's all about, I guess, scarcity in America. And there's only 2,000 people in the NFL. And the 2,000th NFL player makes a lot less than the 2,000th engineer, the 2,000th doctor, the 2,000th lawyer in the country. So we're talking about such a select few. There's 23,000 people playing college football at a top level, and 150 of those will be in the NFL this year. So, and after 2 years, maybe 40 of them, and after 3 years, maybe 30 of them are going to be in the NFL. So you're talking about such a small slice, and yes, they are paid a lot, but think about it, the percentages and the numbers trying to get in. It's easier to become a brain surgeon than a professional athlete.
No doubt.
Andrew, Mr. Brandt, we can't thank you enough for being here tonight, for joining us. I think I speak for everyone on the blog. I know I speak for Corey and myself.
Oh, yeah.
What an amazing honor it is to have you on the phone tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and continued success with the site, and good luck with your negotiations for the Eagles, but not too much success over there, if you know what I mean.
Hey, thanks so much. I really enjoyed being with you guys. You guys do a great job as well.
Thanks a lot. Have a great night, Andrew.
Thanks,
you
Andrew.
Too.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Andrew Brandt, former Packers vice president, current president of the National Football Post, on the phone here tonight, Cheesehead Nation. What more can you say?
I think we need to take a break.
We need to take a break, because after that, I need a beer.
Let's take a break. We'll be back.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, and on the phone with us this evening, Mr. Greg Bedard, beat writer with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Good evening, Mr. Bedard.
Aaron, Corey, how are we doing this evening?
Oh, good.
Doing well. Good to have you on the phone. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a real honor to have you on. Even though I know we're taking you away from your evening, I'm sorry to drag you out here.
You actually broke up there. What was that you said?
Oh, nothing. I'm just making fun of myself. I'll dive right into. Obviously, everyone's here to hear what you've got to say about the current Packer team. So I'm gonna launch right into it, as it were. I know we've been, you know, talking OTAs and minicamps, and not a whole lot you can read into guys running around in shorts. But obviously position battles are really non-existent at this point. But who do you think over the course of the last couple weeks has helped themselves the most? Who stood out to you? Who do you think maybe caught a coach's eye who people weren't thinking about before OTAs?
That's a good question. Let's see. I was prepared for the who's kind of caught your eye in general, and I was going to say Tremont Williams.
Oh, you're playing your audience
now.
Yeah,
baby.
He has just been like Velcro on guys. I mean, like Driver and Jennings. Nobody can shake loose of the guy. Dom Capers was raving about Tremont Williams after practice the other day. But in terms of guys who have helped themselves the most, that's actually a tough one to answer, because, you know, even the coaches said the other day when we talked to them after practice, they said, you know, look, they're just I remember Campman saying this, Campin, sorry, that, you know, he's just looking for, you know, do you have an understanding? Are you learning the playbook? Are you, you know, doing the basics, the fundamentals correctly? So in terms of that, it's really hard to really say a guy might have caught a coach's eye. You know, like Bob McGinn was out of practice the other day, and he asked me about Evan Moore, and I didn't see Evan Moore do anything. I mean, there really aren't the big-time opportunities for these great catches and things like that.
Right.
I'm telling you, if I know you guys have these videos of practice, but
oh, yeah,
in terms of being there, they're really not the most exciting thing in the world. So I'm going to have to
we'll see.
Surprisingly, okay. I don't have anything to say about that question. Normally, I have something to say, but this
All
time
right.
I don't.
Moving on, how about, you know, lots of buzz about Jermichael Finley. Both you, yourself, and several other writers have written how good he looks, how fluid. A lot, obviously, has been written about his Twitter page and his maturity and whatnot. Are you a buyer at this point? Do you think he takes the next step and becomes a valuable piece of the offense this year?
Well, I'm a buyer in this sense, that I think in terms of his athletic ability and football talent, that he looks like he's a year better. As far as all the other intangibles that are really going to determine whether he contributes to this team and makes a difference on, to this team, you know, I still need to see some things. You know, I need to see that he understands his playbook, that he's paying attention, that he has his head screwed on straight. You know, from all outward appearances, he does, but I'm not willing to take the next step on him. But I will say that he has looked incredibly smooth. He looks a year better. He looked like, you know, he looked like a college kid last year. But you got to remember, you know, that he's really going into, well, would this be his junior?
I was
going
to say,
no,
it's
it
like
would
his
be
senior
year.
Yeah.
Texas. So, you know, look, this is still a college-age kid. So you're talking about a kid. You know, everyone looks for that, oh, year two, he's going to be better. Really, for a guy like Finley, year three is going to be the year for him, and I think that will kind of play out. We'll see how he does this year, but I think next year is the big year for him.
Very, very good. Speaking of somebody, another player in their second year, Jeremy Thompson. I think a lot of people were surprised to see him starting on the right side there opposite Campman. Do you think, given what the Packers, you know, Ted Thompson gave up to go get Matthews, do you think it's realistic that Matthews will actually get a legitimate shot to, I guess, you know, hold on to what is right now his starting job?
Whether Thompson will
get
a chance to hold on, or Matthews, Thompson?
Whether Thompson will have that, you know, be given a fair shake, so to speak.
I think he will, just because I've really found the comments that McCarthy made during OTAs, you know, I wrote about it. Other people decided that it was just coach speak, but I don't know. McCarthy, to me, has been a guy who says what he means and does as he says. And when he said that Ryan Pickett's going to be our nose tackle, and then he mentioned, you know, something about special teams and Clay Matthews, you know, those guys will contribute on special teams, you know, I took note of that. And maybe that's where they have Matthews right now. I am definitely not a buyer on Jeremy Thompson at this point. He showed some things last year, but, you know, outside linebacker is a totally different position. Now, what he did at Wake Forest was somewhat similar to what they're asking him to do now. It's much more a read and react defense than, you know, last year's scheme where he would just go after the quarterback. So I think this fits him better, but, you know, he's got a long ways to go, and Clay Matthews, I don't think, has as far to go. So, you know, we'll see, but I think it's going to be a good battle, and I think it's going to be a fair battle, and I think that's the most important thing at this point.
Excellent. Sticking on the defensive side of the ball, you wrote that Mike Turgovac was getting on guys this week. He was showing a little fire. Would you classify that as, like, he was, you know, jovial / teasing, or was he really, you know, chewing guys out and actually pretty upset?
No, well, I wouldn't say he was pretty upset, but he was definitely getting after guys. I mean, he was screaming and cussing and spitting and, you know, all sorts of stuff, getting after his guy. I mean, he was ripping Johnny Jolly for getting out of his gap, and he did the same thing to a couple other guys, and I kind of asked Mike about it after practice the other day, and, you know, he just reiterated that, you know, especially in this 3-4 defense, it was important before in the last scheme, but in this 3-4 defense, those three defensive linemen have to do their job up front or else the whole defense falls apart. And he said, you know, by the time the season starts, these guys are going to know what they're going to do. They're going to do what they're supposed to do. And if they're not in the right gap, it's because they got blocked. It's not going to be because they made a mistake. And he said, I'm in charge of that. And so, yeah, that's why you see me getting after those guys. That I'm going to get it done. These guys are going to be ready. And, you know, we're not going to fail in terms of that this year.
You know, has he addressed anything in regards to the fact that, you know, he obviously left Carolina. He was the coordinator there. And reports are that it was his choice to leave. You know, he wasn't fired. Has he, you know, talked at all about what made him make that decision and what attracted him to the Packers job?
Well, he talked about it. I think it was either to Bob McGinn or Tom Silverstein. I forget which one talked to him. I think it was Bob talked to Mike the day that he was hired, and he kind of addressed it. And, you know, Turgovac is a guy who he's another one, a straight shooter. If you ask him a question, like I asked him about Justin Harrell yesterday, he wouldn't tell me what was going on with Justin just because he wasn't sure of McCarthy's policy. But other than that, he answers the question directly, because I spent a lot of time asking him about this defensive staff and kind of has he regretted his decision? Is what he's encountered here, is that what he envisioned? And I could tell you that he loves the decision that he made. He loves this coaching staff. He alluded to something to the effect of, you know, maybe some other places that he's been. He hasn't worked with people that have been quite the professionals as these Packers coaches have. So I don't know if that was a shot at Carolina or not. It was hard to tell, but I could tell you that he really likes what he's doing. I think he likes it because Dom is a guy who doesn't rule by consensus, because everybody knows what they're supposed to do and everyone has their job, but Dom, it's a collective effort, and Dom taps into everything that he has, all the talents on that coaching staff, and I think Mike is really enjoying that, and he's very happy.
That's good to hear. It's always good to hear, obviously. Switching over to the offensive side of the ball, you've written twice this week how impressive Brandon Jackson looks. Now, again, we've talked about it. I know they're in shorts, and they're not hitting people, but you also wrote that Ryan Grant hasn't shown much. Now, do you think this is just, yeah, they don't have pads on and Jackson's the quicker of the two? Or do you think that Jackson could possibly take a step towards challenging Grant for the starting job? Because, you know, every time McCarthy's asked about this, he pretty much shuts it down and says, you know, Grant's our starter. And obviously they paid him last year like a starter. But do you think Jackson has a shot to take that job from him? Or is it just it's Grant or it's Grant with Jackson as 1A?
Well, I mean, as you guys know, I was a pretty vocal critic of Grant, and I was one who was asking Mike McCarthy often, what's the deal with Ryan Grant, and why isn't Brandon Jackson playing more? Because I just couldn't get it, and I don't know if I've ever got a satisfactory answer in that regard. I will say that certain people in the Packers organization wanted Ryan Grant to play. And I don't think that's going to change. I think that it's Ryan Grant's job, and he has to absolutely fall on his face to lose it. I think that the Packers are interested in seeing Deshaun Winn and Lumpkin challenge Brandon Jackson. I just didn't understand that last year. Brandon Jackson was
was unconscious
twice the running
in that
back
Carolina
Ryan Grant
game.
Was for their first eight games of the season.
I couldn't agree more.
Go ahead.
You know, sticking on the offensive side of the ball, do you think Jamon Meredith, who the Packers signed today, do you think Jamon Meredith, does he have what it takes to secede, Mr. Clifton over there on the left side? Do you think that was the plan in drafting him? Or do you think that they're just kind of looking at him there and hoping it works?
You broke up a little bit there.
Do you think
he's going to be the guy?
Yeah, do you think he's going to, you know, take over? Do you think the plan is to let Clifton go walk in his contract year next year and then just insert Meredith?
Yes. I think that's I think that's the plan. And if the Packers had somebody that they knew could do the job at left tackle, and, you know, don't read too much into this, but I think they're happy with what they've seen out of Tony Mall at this point. Then again, Tony Mall is a guy who has done this before, and then he just, when he gets a chance to start a game, he has a total brain fart.
Yep.
But I think if in a perfect world, if they had a guy ready now, I think Clifton might be gone. I think they're sick of the no practice thing, and they like seeing what these guys do when they all practice. So, yeah, I think Meredith is going to be given every chance to win that job, but you know, we'll have to see. Every time you think Clifton's dead, he comes back.
Yep.
So
back.
You can't count him out. But I think that is the plan right now, is to let Clifton walk.
Well, and it does make sense. Here's a very short question. Who beats out Ruvell Martin, if anyone?
Part of me wants to say Brett Swain because he's had a good training camp, but I don't see it. I'm not sure who it's going to be, but I wouldn't count Ruvell Martin out. I mean, they love him. They love his blocking. They love his special teams. I haven't seen enough of the younger guys to think that they can do it. You know, none of those guys have really caught my eye. I mean, Jake Allen looked really good last year, but he hasn't done really that much right now. And I don't know about Jerron Harris and Jamarco Simmons. None of those guys have really shown up big. Cole Heckendorf had a big day the other day, but, you know, there are a lot of things that we haven't seen behind closed doors during OTA. So as of right now, I would say nobody. That Martin's back.
And that makes sense. And again, you like you say, they like him for his blocking, and obviously there isn't any blocking going on right now, not real blocking. So maybe someone shows up in training camp, but I see Martin sticking around as well. Going away from the team just for a moment here, and getting into the trade part of it, does Bob McGinn read your blog? Does he know it's there? Does he read your blog? Does he know it exists?
Once in a while. He knows something exists. He knows that I'm doing some sort of work. I guess.
Because I was just wondering, you said, I think it was yesterday, or the day that you were late, that you were talking with, was it Dorsey? Somebody, you were talking, and
oh, yeah.
Wayne Larrivee.
Yeah, John Dorsey.
Dorsey, Larrivee, and Bob McGinn. And I said, Bob McGinn's at practice? Well, why does Bob McGinn get to go to practice but not write anything? What is that about?
Well, that I can explain that, because that was very rare, because normally Bob and Tom are off until about the week of training camp. But the Packers kind of changed things this year. So if you wanted to get most of your information for your training camp advances, you needed to get coaches after practice on Wednesday. Tuesday.
Right.
So that's why Bob was out there. Normally, you know, in the old days, you know, Bob could get anybody you wanted on the phone, but it's like everything else, even access to assistant coaches for a guy like Bob McGinn has changed over the years and become more restrictive. So that's why Bob was out there. It was just a one shot to get ready for his training camp. Previous.
If you could give him a message for us that we love him at press conferences. I mean, we love him. I mean, whenever there's a contentious moment in a press conference with the Packers, you know Bob is on one end.
Without
of it.
Bob McGinn,
oh yeah, he's a beaut when it comes to our guys. We've actually had some. I forget what moment it was where he. I think it might have been the Favre press conference where he had a good moment, and I kind of ragged on him, saying that, you know, he's kind of almost shrieking at one point. He's like, really? He was all embarrassed, and I'm just like, nah, that's fine. He just, you know, Bob picks and chooses his points, and, you know, if you're not answering or being direct with him, he's going to let you know. So I love Bob. He's awesome.
We are huge.
Well, Green Bay needs more reporters like Greg Bedard and Bob McGinn. Let me tell you that right now.
Amen to that. We're gonna get back.
We're gonna
get back to the team here for a little bit. You know, Aaron Kampman obviously made a lot of headlines by not talking for a long time. Now he's talking and not saying a whole lot. Now, we know you've written quite a bit about it, especially that first week. A lot of other people have written about it, both not only locally, but nationally as well. Obviously, you're not going to spill everything right here for the less than 100 people that are watching, Greg. I want to remind you of that. So if you want to tell us a secret, no, you know, it's not going to go very far. But is there something else behind the scenes that Packer fans don't know about? I mean, is it really as simple as he's in a contract year, they've switched schemes, and he's mad? Is it really that simple?
I don't even know if it's that. And the only reason I said some of those things and speculated was to kind of prove a point, to Aaron and other people, is that, you know, look, if you don't talk, if you don't answer these simple questions, we have no choice but to speculate. I mean, Packers fans want to know what's going on with you, and it's not like at the time that we were asking for the state secrets of the, you know, 3-4 outside linebacker, like detailed, you know, job description. People just wanted to hear from Aaron. You know, what's your reaction? What you've just done for the past 7 years is being scrapped, and you got to try something new. You have to have some reaction to it. You know, don't be a robot. Come out and answer things. And he didn't, so we were left to speculate. I do think that there's something there about him being in a contract year and the Packers being quiet about a contract extension. I do think that it's part of it, but I think a lot of it, I think most of it is just Aaron just doesn't know. So he doesn't know what to say. And, you know, be that as it may, you know, we'll see what happens.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. And then I just wanted to touch on this real quick, because I think if anybody reads, obviously everyone here reads your blog.
Yeah, everybody that's watching right now reads that blog.
And maybe 5, maybe 6 people read our blog. You know, obviously we had our little dust up earlier in the off season about the about McCarthy and his switching and or sticking with the Bob Sanders / bait scheme when he came on board.
I feel an ambush coming on.
No, not an ambush.
We should call him Colonel Bob Sanders.
Colonel
from now
Bob
on.
Sanders. No, it's not an ambush at all. I just wanted to ask, do you think? I mean, can you see in Aaron Campman's reaction? I mean, here's one guy who had to switch schemes. And my point at the time was that McCarthy was facing a room full of guys, you know, that were going to have to switch schemes for the fourth time, you know, in 3 years. And I just think that Campman's reaction is kind of like, it's not, you know, not proving my point by any stretch of the imagination. But I think that there's more to it than, more to that point than you gave credence. And I only bring it up because you called the argument stupid on your blog, you know, and I just think...
I still think it's stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Look, answer me this.
All right.
You get your dream job. You're named an NFL head coach.
Amen.
And, you know, tell me you're going to agree to, you know, the general manager saying, well, you need to keep the defensive scheme. Or
you mean the general manager
think that
who hired me?
To keep
me?
These players happy, to get them on my side, I need to keep this defensive scheme, which stinks and hasn't won anything since the Dallas Cowboys of the early 90s.
Hey, I grow so, amen. You're pitching to the choir here. Yeah, I know. I know.
Didn't I read that you're a big fan?
A big fan of what?
Bob Sanders?
Oh, get out of town.
Oh.
Get out of town. Now you're just making stuff up.
Well, yeah.
No, yeah, the thing I posted, right? But I'll also point people to the post I wrote after the Packers lost the NFC Championship when I said that McCarthy needed to fire Sanders, and that was after a 13-3 season. So I think my bona fides are set on my not liking Bob Sanders. Thank you very much.
Can we just agree to call him Colonel Bob Sanders, and I'll be happy?
Very good. All right, so I'll get off of that. I'll get off of that. Just a couple more things for you, Greg. Thank you so much for being here. I don't mean to be contentious.
Whatever you guys want to talk about, Aaron, you know that, you know, I don't duck any questions. So,
no, I know you don't.
Whatever you want to know, ask.
You're the man. You're the man. All right. Okay, here's something that has really been eating away at me all day. Well, since about 4 o'clock this afternoon. News came out today that Nick Saban is in contract talks for an extension with Alabama. And I just want to know if you'd like to take this opportunity to congratulate Nick Saban.
No.
Oh, okay. I just
You want to hear my good Nick Saban story?
Yes.
Yeah, we do.
That's exactly where I was going.
Okay. Okay. Have I said this one about the defensive backs and him swearing? Said that one in the chat before?
No, you have not.
I don't know if I have.
I think he did. Oh, no.
Okay. So this is Saban's first year. I think it was his first year. Yeah. And the Dolphins were opening Thursday Night Football, big game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Dolphins were actually, or maybe it was his second year, that the Dolphins were, you know, Dr. Z picked them to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was when Culpepper was their quarterback, right?
Yes.
It was against the Steelers. Yeah.
Which was awesome. but anyways, so they go and they play the Steelers. And this is when they're, you know, actually, I think it was the first season. I don't know. Maybe it was the second season. Right. Yeah, no, you're right. It was Culpepper. Right. And so the defense, the secondary has just been a shambles. As his whole first year going from the Jim Bates 4-3 defense into his hybrid defense. And the first game, the secondary is just in disarray. They give up a long touchdown to the Pittsburgh tight end. So there were a couple other big long plays. So after the game, next day, you know, I'm talking to some sources, and I find out that on the plane ride home, some of the players were complaining loudly about the secondary. At that point, Lance Schulters, who had played pretty well for them the year before, had not been re-signed, and they had a bunch of like young guys back there, and like guys like Jason Taylor and Vonnie Holiday were just like, they could see the season going down in twos because the secondary was really bad, and so I heard that Saban walked by, and I forget who it was, but somebody said, you know, within earshot of Saban, you think Lance Schulters is still available? I mean, that's how bad they were in an opening game. So I write this analysis of the secondary, and I try to not make a big deal out of it because it was the opening game, and, you know, there's always rough spots. And, and so I buried it kind of in the story, and it took a couple of days, but all of a sudden I hear you from Harvey Green, the Dolphins PR guys, Coach Saban would like to see you in his office. So I get called up there. I go up there, and imagine this. The door's like 3.5 feet wide. It's a really heavy door, and it actually has to be closed and opened by a garage door opener. So you walk in, and Saban's behind the desk, and he hits the clicker, and the thing closes, and he starts going into about how, like, Greg, what you wrote, like, you know, it's not helping anybody. All you're doing is hurting the team, and you know, he's just going on and on. He just never got it. He thought that I was supposed to support the team and I was there to help put them in position to win and stuff like that. So he's going on and on, and I'm just listening to him, you know, just waiting for him to stop. And so he said, well, either you got it one of two ways. Either you talk to the guys when you weren't supposed to, which is against the rules, or you got it secondhand, which isn't right. So I wait for my opportunity, stops. I said, well, Coach, how do you know a player didn't call me and tell me? And he just started to flip out. He started rocking back and forth in his chair, and he started F-bombing me this and cursing me. And you know, and he said, I'm going down to the team meeting, and I'm going to tell all those guys never to talk to you ever again, and you're effing dead to us, and you should get your ass off this beat, and like stuff like that. And he finally finished, and I said, okay, Coach, well, you know, you got your position, I have my position, and this was a good chat, okay? And that's it, and I got up and left, and that was the beginning of the end of my relationship with Nick Saban. That happened another, like, 3 times that year. So,
wow.
Good times, and I'm glad he's in contract negotiation talks with Alabama.
I know you are. I know you are, because that means he's out of the NFL. And you don't need to worry about him or ever be asked about him, except when you come on Cheesehead Nation.
we'll never ask you about him again.
Right. Greg, thank you so much for joining us tonight. You're a real sport to come on out. Thank you so much for the Twitter updates, for everything you do at the JS Online. You know, I've written about it. It's a real pleasure to read.
Let it be said that Greg Bedard had a Twitter account before Tom Pelissero.
You just want to set the record straight there. Just trying to get straight.
I had nothing to do with that announcement.
Nothing at all. That was pure Corey Banky right there. So, Greg, really, thanks a lot. And I hope you'll join us again during training camp sometime during the season.
Yes, please.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Greg Bedard.
Ladies and gentlemen, Greg Bedard.
Beat
you know
writer,
what? You know what needs to happen?
What's that?
A break needs to happen. This is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Okay?
It
that
is...
was amazing, and we're going to take a break. So.
And we'll be back to wrap up OTAs, minicamp, and head into training camp. Thanks for joining us. And we're back.
And we're back.
For the final segment of OTAs / minicamps.
Welcome back. Hey, this is the best show we've ever had.
I'm speechless. What do you got, guys?
Come on, Packer fans.
Let's read the blog here. What do you guys want to talk about? Because honestly, I've been talking all night.
What have the polls been saying?
I have no
idea.
Has
anybody voted on any polls?
Whose contract will the Packers do next? Darren College is leading the pack.
Darren College? What are the options?
Darren College, Aaron Kampman. Oh, now it's.
I think they'll do Aaron Kampman. Oh, yeah, it goes away.
It
That's
goes
right.
away on me. I don't know. I really think Darren College will be next. I think they're going to wait on every defensive guy. I don't think they touch Kampman, Collins, or Bigby until at least halfway through the season. You know, there's that week, I think it's 5 or 6, where the cutoff is to, you know, you can put money onto the current year's cap like they did with Aaron Rodgers last year. I just think, you know, I don't think they touch anybody's contract on defense until at least 4 or 5 games into the season. I just want everyone to know that we here at Cheesehead TV, and I know Railbird Central, Packers Lounge, and our guests here tonight. We got CD from Tundra Vision. We got Brandon from Acme Packing Company.
CD, let's stop for a second. He's been at every blogcast.
Every one. So we thank you, CD.
Every blogcast.
Every single one. But, you know, these guys, we will all be writing throughout the month. I mean, some of us more than others, you know. Obviously, I'm going away to Wisconsin, to the homeland next week.
The homeland.
But we'll all be blogging throughout the month. So, you know, keep checking. I think last offseason, it was pretty dead during this time. This year, I think we've got some more active people on board blogging quite a little bit. So hopefully, we'll have quite a bit to chew over in this horrible, horrible month of no football.
No football.
Although we will have, you know, signings coming up.
We got
to get Matthews and Raji under contract.
It's true.
We'll see.
I'm and not that course, worried about Raji getting under contract.
Of course, there's the drama to the west.
What drama?
Of Green Bay. Of course, we're talking about Favre saying that he's not a traitor, which, of course, he is.
It's true. Well, he's not yet.
Not yet. Not officially. Andrew in Atlanta, I like that on the record. Not yet. Not officially.
Not yet.
And I would like to point out to everyone that not once tonight did I ask either of our guests about our former quarterback.
It's true.
Or his relationship with our current
Andrew
general manager.
Andrew Brandt made a little kind of funny reference to it.
He did. He did. He said, the quarterback, you know who, what's his name?
And we kept going. And you know why we kept
going? Right through it.
Because that has nothing to do with the Green Bay Packers.
Absolutely. Well, yes, you're right. It doesn't.
I'm not. I am right.
Yeah, I know.
Right now, today, that has nothing to do with the Green Bay Packers.
You're absolutely right.
Tomorrow, it may.
And if you haven't yet, check out the blog post where I linked to Leroy Butler's Twitter account, the post where he said that Aaron Rodgers was still the best quarterback in the division, even if and when Favre signs with the Vikings. That's Leroy Butler. That's a diehard Packer right there.
Yeah, the creator of the Lambeau Leap, ladies and gentlemen.
The creator. You can't get more diehard than that. Overall, Packer fans, very excited. We love it when the guys are on working and you see guys doing it. I think what I'm most excited about is you know, Aaron Rodgers talking about how Mike McCarthy is going to be giving him a lot more responsibility at the line, a lot more freedom. Not, you know, he's not going to be Peyton Manning out there, but the fact that they're putting in more, he said, and these are his words, 4 and 5 wide receiver plays. I think that's got to be exciting for fans. We like the little Big Five. Big Five
big
was conspicuous
five.
In its absence
I like
last
Big
year.
Five, but I only like Big Five if it's protected
if it works.
Well. Well, as long as the quarterback doesn't end up on his butt, I like
well,
Big Five.
Well, Corey had a very apt quote last year. It's funny you should say that because I was listening to one of our old podcasts, and you said, and I quote, "It's kind of hard to use the weapon if you don't know how it works." And there were a few times last year when McCarthy got a little greedy. He went 5 wide or 4 wide in the tight end, no back in the backfield, just his 5 guys up front. And Rodgers and his propensity to hold the ball pretty much got him killed.
Yeah,
I mean,
pretty much.
There's a reason he was sacked almost twice as much, probably more than twice as much
and,
as Favre the year before.
And
with the same O-line.
The greatest weakness of the Green Bay Packers was always revealed in that moment.
Was the offensive line?
Oh,
Well, I didn't say that.
No, I know.
You just said that.
No, but and the argument, I got to say, speaking of that post, that very post I was just referencing about the coach's film from 2007, on that play, you can see how Favre made the offensive line better than it was.
Oh, yeah.
You can see. On the play, the interior of his line is getting blown up into his lap. It's a three-step drop. He goes back. Or no, I'm sorry. He's in a shotgun. But he takes like two steps back. Driver's coming over the middle, and he's got a defensive tackle in his lap. I mean, but Favre gets the ball out where it's supposed to go. And I think, you know, lots of people wrote about it. Bob McGinn was famous for writing about it for years, about how this offensive line, even in the heyday, even when Wall and Rivera were there, was somewhat overestimated because of Favre's ability to get the ball out so fast, nowhere to go with the ball, especially when it came to a hot read situation.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, speaking of hot reads, you know what else Favre was good at?
What's that?
The five-step drop.
The five-step drop. And interesting enough today, you know, there was a little something in the Green Bay Press Gazette about Tom Clements giving Rodgers 10 things to work on in the offseason, one of the most important of which being his footwork, which I talked about earlier in the offseason in a Aaron Rodgers breakdown, if you will. And I think I think it confirms exactly what I wrote, that Rodgers, for as good as he is, and he is good, he has a chance to be very good to great. He has lots of ways that he can improve. And somebody, I want to say, and I think one of our guests here tonight wrote in response to that that post that he would much rather see, he was critical of the post because he would much rather see, breakdowns and analysis of bad to mediocre players that could improve to get us to the Super Bowl rather than Rodgers get to one or more Pro Bowls. And I put it in the blog, and I'll put it right here. Rodgers' improvement will go miles more to the Packers getting to the Super Bowl than any improvement from Charlie Peppra or Mike Montgomery ever will. They can hit their ceiling. They can burst through their ceiling. And that won't matter a lick to the Packers getting to the Super Bowl as much as Aaron Rodgers improving on his play from last year.
It's true, and the defense not being terrible.
Well, you know. Oh, you know, I forgot to ask Greg if he picked up Dom Capers playbook yet. Dom Capers, are you there?
I mean, okay, answer me this. Riddle me this, Batman.
What's that?
Okay, who is most responsible? What unit is most responsible for the 1996 Super Bowl win?
What unit? Offense or defense? Is that what you're asking me?
Offense or defense?
Wait, the game itself or getting them there?
Both.
Both?
Both, because of the same answer.
All right.
Don't even try to play that.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. It's a good question.
Yeah, answer it.
Okay, I got to say the offense. I got to say the offense.
Ouch.
I think that offense gets to the Super Bowl even with a top five-ranked defense, but I don't think the number one-ranked defense gets to the Super Bowl with a like top 5-10-ranked offense.
Okay, what unit won us the Super Bowl?
Special teams.
There you go. That was a trick question. Yeah.
Well, I mean, how can you not say Super Bowl MVP Desmond Howard?
Yeah, exactly.
Although that's not, everyone knows that's not true.
Although I will say that.
You've got Favre, Freeman, you've got Reggie White with the back-to-back sacks in the fourth quarter. So there are a lot of accolades to go around.
What do they say in the live blog? Because I think you're wrong.
I'm sure
they're
making fun of us.
I think it's the 96 defense.
96 Packers, the only team to be number one in offense and defense and win a championship. That is correct.
Okay, but which one was the most responsible?
Come on, people. Tell us.
Yeah, tell us. I think defense.
Andy Mann says D-line.
D. It's D. It's D. Don't play. Okay? And you know what? This is the time to talk about it because we just finished minicamps and we know nothing.
That's true. And that's what's so disconcerting.
Here's the only thing we know, right? Greg Jennings is got more than 1 year now. That's nice.
Which is great.
Right?
Yeah.
And a bunch of rookies that we don't know anything about sign contracts.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And
that's
Nick true. Collins still doesn't understand how to run a 3-4.
Oh, I forgot to ask Greg about that, too. Just Nick how Collins. Dumb is Nick Collins?
Ooh.
How dumb is this kid? Oh, wait. You know why I said I didn't have any more audio? I got one more audio.
Oh,
I got one more for you. Here we go. Wait a second. Whoa.
Wait for it.
You guys ready? This is Nick Collins talking about how humble he is. Here's Nick Collins, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm a humble kid. You know, I'm hardly nothing business or whoever talk about me, whatever, get next to me. I'm here to do my job, you know. Come here, you know, help this team win, play football. That's all I know how to do is play football. You know, I'm a winner, and that's what I'm trying to do, win the championship here.
He's a humble kid.
There you go.
He's a humble kid. Oh, and I want to say, Greg, hey, nice FaceTime on the Collins interview there at Packers.com in the rocking the green shirt. Looking good, buddy. Nice.
Well, why didn't you mention that during the interview?
Because, you know, I'm talking Packers. I don't want to talk about his fashion sense.
Oh, but everybody talks about your fashion sense, though.
I know. People, lay off the hat, all right? I like my hat.
I like the whole outfit.
Whoever it was earlier who was talking about that I look like a French dude, why do people keep thinking this is a beret? It's an old English newspaper boy hat.
It's like a jazz hat, right?
It's a jazz hat.
It's a jazz hat.
That works.
Like,
I'll take
if you're on Bleecker Street, you can wear that hat.
You can wear this hat. I guess, you know, Wisconsin, I get beat up.
I was going to wear a funny jacket, and then I was like, you know what? Just be the techie and be quiet.
Bedard just wrote, release and replace. Greg, thank you for writing that. I wanted to cite your column of that very topic. Didn't get a chance to work it into the interview, but everyone should go back and read Greg's excellent, excellent column about Thompson's philosophy, how the Packers are making the turn. You saw it beginning with the draft. You know, he's laid the groundwork. He thinks the talent level is in place. Now it's a question of finding guys like Greg Jennings, who are clearly elite or clearly like the best players on the squad, getting them locked up, and then letting other guys go. And as Greg wrote in that piece, and I think Packer fans will be surprised. We'll see some surprises next offseason about who is allowed to let go, who's allowed to walk. I mean, depending on how they look, I wouldn't be surprised to watch Campman walk. I wouldn't be surprised to watch guys
like that.
Big B walk.
Oh,
you know?
Wait,
I mean,
don't say
I'm
things
just,
like that.
You know, it could happen.
You can
Nick
say
Collins,
that about Big B,
I would
but don't
be
say
not
that about
surprised
Campman.
At all if Nick Collins walks and
oh,
Smith
I wouldn't be
steps
surprised.
In and takes his place. Nope. You know, so that's where the Packers are entering. And as Greg wrote, if Thompson does his job right, they should be letting guys go and able to fill them in with picks like Jamon Meredith at left tackle. Pickups like Anthony Smith at safety.
So you're saying Jamon Meredith, this is your year? You're a rookie, but this
no,
is
no,
the
no.
year?
No, next year. They'll play Clifton this year. Although I know we have a stalwart reader. I haven't seen him here tonight. Buck Slayer, NYC.
Oh, yeah.
He is adamant, and I'm talking adamant, that Clifton will be cut in training camp. And I have to say, when he said that, I thought he was insane. He said that in March. Now, I would not be surprised whatsoever if Meredith shows that he can handle it. If Meredith shows anything in training camp, and you heard Greg talk about Tony.
Yeah,
Moll.
Well, Greg, yeah, exactly.
No way. I'm just here to say, and I know Greg was saying that, you know, they're playing him there and they may give him a shot.
I'm sorry,
but I'm here to tell you, no way.
Until the Packers saying. Prove otherwise, oh, we have the worst offensive line in the NFL. Okay.
Oh no.
Yes.
No. Not even close.
Yes. Yes.
Worse close. Than the Lions.
Okay, I take that back.
There are 32 other teams.
Okay,
you know?
I mean, take that back.
All right.
Okay.
We have one of the worst?
What? Okay. We're in the... I don't even know.
You're insane.
We're terrible.
You're clearly
we're terrible.
Insane. No,
we're terrible.
We're not. They're not
yes.
terrible.
Yes.
They're not terrible.
We're in the 15 percentile.
They need to stick in the same spots for an extended time.
I'm ready.
They got to stop putting college in three different spots and just let them concentrate on left guard. They got to solidify Spitz and sit in there on the interior. And then they got to figure out right tackle.
I'm ready. Hey, I'm ready. I am ready for all those surprises, except for the Campman one. I think that's a little ridiculous.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining. Of course, thank you to our guests, Andrew Brandt, Greg Bedard. Greg, thanks for joining us on the blog. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us over the course of the past month.
Thank you.
This has been educational.
This has been amazing. This has been awesome.
This has been amazing. I don't think it's ever been done before. Kudos to Brian at Railbird Central.
Brian Caribou.
Coining it the blogcast.
Alex
Talish. Alex over Packers Lounge.
The director.
Putting
CD
it together. CD
and Jelly. Iron Man for taking a vacation day.
A day off work to join us tonight,
okay.
Ladies and gentlemen. And of course, thank you to Brandon showing up.
Andy Man, Acme Packing Company. Thanks for stepping up to the plate. Thanks to everybody, the Packer Ranter that came on the show the last.
Absolutely.
It's our fifth show.
Thank you, everybody. We are going to attempt shows akin to this at least once a week during the season. And
post-game.
And
post-game.
Hopefully we'll have some post-game shows.
Some kind of post-game around the horn kind of thing.
Some kind of post-game show. But we will definitely, we'll be taking a break this month. We'll obviously, like I said, all the blogs will be up and running. And of course, check out Greg Bedard on JS Online. Always quality information, quality writing, and all the Packers information if you'd ever want. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a privilege, an honor. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you in training camp.